Why, hi guys.
Hello.
Hey Cookie, welcome back. Or should I say, welcome to the Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 34. Today is October 1st, 2017, and I'm Scott.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Neil.
And with this role reversal, I'm going to go ahead and kick us right off into the intro of our episode. Now that I've taken over your role, Neil, do you feel like you've been properly usurped?
I think this is a nice welcome change.
All right, cool. Well, in that case, I'm going to go ahead and continue with rolling us into the games section, as we have nothing to talk about in our intro, right?
I was about to say, have you been doing anything, Scott?
No. This is my show now. We're going through all of the chattiness.
Yeah, we do have a
actually,
lot of
shit. Actually, no. What have you
covered. Guys been up to? Hearing about you have more fires.
Oh, yeah, but they're not bad. It's like, it's been cold and rainy.
Only some I'm people's fine. Homes have been destroyed this time.
As my home's fine. Many.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really done much. I've been a little less busy. I say this after working 3 12-hour days, but I did not work 12 hours Thursday or Friday, so I ended up buying some new games and stuff.
Nice.
We'll have to talk about that later. And I have only been up to really watching anime.
You just
and
got
you
back
can hear
from
all about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear all about the best anime of the season in our most recent omake. Well,
yes.
you can hear about all the anime you need to avoid if you wish to enjoy all the best anime of the fall season. Or I guess that was end of summer season?
Yeah, I guess so. This is now the fall season starting
yeah,
up.
Yeah, now we're starting up fall season. Okay.
Did you guys hear about like these Tokyo or these protests in Japan over the firing of some anime director, by the way?
No.
No.
All right, I have to look this up again. I don't know if it was necessarily that crazy, but it was big enough to make it to your like typical Reddit front pages and stuff. But the show was, I think, called Kimono Friends or something like that. Fact checking right now.
Okay, well, he's fact checking. I'll talk about Georgia.
All right.
It's hot. There's not much to do in Augusta. We had a really good, authentic Hawaiian meal.
Like roast pig and all?
Like no, I had,
hog on the spit or buried I underground?
I had Kuyo pulled pork.
Ooh,
my wife had some teriyaki steak. But apparently, like, people drive from, like, the military guys drive from Atlanta to go to this Hawaiian, like, really run-down-ish looking Hawaiian restaurant. In Augusta, Georgia. So they drive 3 hours for this place.
Dude, you have to follow the military guys to where they want to go for any sort of... Hawaiian doesn't count as like foreign cuisine, I guess, since they're
I count
they're
it. That was kind of exotic.
Yeah, like exactly.
I mean, is it exotic if you can just go to Kona Grill and get Hawaiian culinary or Hawaiian food there?
Well,
I will
can
say
you get legit
no.
Hawaiian cuisine, or can you get our
bastardized
American
yeah. Hawaiian cuisine?
It's very confusing with Hawaii being a state, but also far enough away and independent enough that they still have a pretty like prominent cultural difference between that and the mainland United States.
Mm-hmm. Hawaiian food's really good. I'm super excited for, you know, missing at least one podcast in January.
Are you going to Hawaii in January?
I am going to Hawaii in January.
Ooh.
Actually,
what island are you going to be on?
We're going to be on not the Big Island.
I think that's Maui.
No. The Big Island is actually just the Big Island, apparently.
You're going to be on the island that was not ravaged by hurricanes.
Oh, correct. You're right. Hawaii is the Big Island. My mistake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so weird, right? We were talking about that while we were in Augusta. But yeah, we'll be on one of the islands.
Oh, and before we get corrections, I know that we're talking the Pacific Ocean. I'm just poking fun at the weird articles that are going up on like the New York Times that are literally like, what islands can I still vacation to in the Gulf of Mexico?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Whatever island you want to. Depends on how much you want to do. Or if you just don't mind popping a tent somewhere. Yep, so just had really good Hawaiian food. That was kind of the highlight of my thing. Oh, I guess I saw family. That's nice.
They're almost as good as authentic Hawaiian cuisine.
Sadly, that is accurate.
That's unfortunate, because don't we have some family listeners in the Cookie Skamilk household?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Did we lose our number one biggest fan?
Oh, yeah, she's gone.
She doesn't care anymore?
I think she might. I don't know.
She probably just is worried about you spending too much time on video games, so she listens to this podcast to keep tabs on you.
Yeah.
I could see that. I could see that. I appreciate Dave a little more. By the way, guys, as a quick aside, I know I mentioned Dave. I definitely just got an email from Dave.
Like, just a second ago, did we just get a new email?
Really?
Yeah, yes. We did. Oh my gosh. Okay. It says, hopefully this hits you guys before ... you start recording today.
Okay, let me check.
Okay, sorry. I figured I'd just mention that he did just send us an email.
Very good.
No, this is great. This is how our listeners get to hear the magic happen. Split-second decision making, and
this is how they know we're doing it live, guys.
Quick edits on a Google Doc. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, welcome to our pseudo live episode here.
Is it normally not live?
I mean, we're obviously always recording what's happening in real time.
But now at least Dave knows what time we record at.
Oh, yeah. I guess welcome to the show for him specifically, even though he's not hearing us right now.
I mean, we're not that consistent. No, I'm just saying, like, you get to hear docket edits in the middle of the episode. Like,
but
how much
of this is going to get cut, I wonder?
I doubt any of it. Neil's
yeah, Neil doesn't edit. If there's one
what
secret
are you talking
that everybody
about? There's
knows.
Edits all over the place. All right. So if we're going to try and keep this in, we should move on to something that I think a couple of us have been able to share in experiences. Like, all right, fuck it.
Anyway, Neil's not really doing a good enough job of taking back his command over the docket. So I'm going to enforce control a second time. We're gonna go ahead and talk about the SNES Classic, something that two out of the three of us have gotten to enjoy, even though it brings me like great sorrow to admit that Cookie has not yet gotten a chance.
Rip. I'm now 6 for 6.
We're trying to get him access to a SNES. We're doing the best we can.
You're 6 for 6 of what?
Trying to get one? I've struck out 6 times.
Oh, I see. You're 0 for 6.
Nope, 6 for 6.
that would imply that you want to be unsuccessful.
Kind of, more or less. I doubt I'll ever get one of these things, but you know, I'll keep trying. So 6 for 6.
So SNES Classic, I opened it up last night, and Scott, when you opened up your SNES Classic, did you have any thoughts about the make or build quality?
Yeah, actually, this is great. Even my dad had some opinions about it immediately when he saw it. Because one of the big reasons I bought this is that the person I bonded with playing the most Super Nintendo was actually my dad. And so, like, it's a blast to the past and nostalgia for the both of us. And first off, both of us were absolutely stunned by the size, even though it says... you know, it is the Classic or the Mini. I was still startled by the fact that it fit in my below average man hands, almost like it almost occupied my whole hand, but it's really tiny. Like it's incredibly small, and I get that it runs a chip just like a Raspberry Pi, so it should be small, but I expected they might add just a little bit more form factor. I don't know, to make it seem at least somewhat close to the original size. I don't know why that matters to me, but it just seems really weird to be playing on such a dinky machine.
Well, it would have been nice if they had more than two controller ports.
Yeah, that too. Like, there's space obviously limited any option for extra controller ports as well.
That said, I guess there aren't many games that would use more than two. I think there's
Secret
one game.
Secret of Mana.
Right.
And I don't even know how that multiplayer works. I just know that that has a three multiplayer option.
Or but anyway, it would if it were the original SNES with a multi-tap.
Yeah, with a multi-tap. The other things I noticed about the build are that the plastic is, like, the colors, if I go downstairs and match it with my pretty solid condition original SNES console, they look, like, dead on. Like, it looks like just a miniaturized version, which is really cool. I really would have loved to see Nintendo just release the Super Famicom edition globally, because I think that I just like the body's form factor a little bit better. I think it looks nicer with those kind of smoother and rounded shapes. But I'd say I like it overall. The controllers feel a little flimsier than the original SNES controllers, but that's about the only complaint. And the buttons, the on and off toggle and the reset button, like, it feels like it has good action. They're very, the on and off toggle is very rigid, and the reset has a nice spring to it. It doesn't feel cheaply made in any way, besides the plastic for the controller being a little bit lighter, maybe a little flimsier.
I kind of wish the eject button actually worked, but didn't do anything.
Yeah, I pressed it just hoping that would be the case, that you might be able to toggle or like just push in
Wait,
the eject.
It doesn't go in?
It doesn't work, and obviously the cartridge port at the top is also sealed shut.
Yeah,
well,
I
understood that
too.
Part.
In regards to the controller, maybe it's just because every controller I currently have access to is one that has been, you know, used. But the original controllers feel like they're smoother, and again, that could be just the wear from
loosening
the original
from
texture.
Age.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that I also am uncertain about is how much of the buttons from my SNES controllers have a much smoother action because I've been mashing those buttons for however many years, and this one's fresh out of the box. I don't even think my original SNES was fresh out of the box. I'm pretty sure we bought that used, so
the
I really
buttons,
have no idea how it compares.
The ABXY buttons feel similar to what I remember on some of our fresher SNES controllers. The D-pad feels maybe a little different. It feels stiffer. That's probably, you know, amount of use necessary. The start and select buttons feel terrible, just like the original.
Yeah, they're raised up a little too high, I feel.
Compared to the original?
I don't even know if the original was that way as well. Because that's the rubber that I can definitely guarantee over time would rub down and reduce, and some of its form would erode off with continued presses and use.
But they
either
did
way,
nail down
I just
the
think
shitty
it,
feel of it for sure.
Yeah, it just sticks up and feels pretty awkward. Like, not great, and I adjusted the controls in Super Metroid so I didn't have to hit the select button to change missiles, because that I just didn't like that. And they feel like they're just a little too far away for comfortable switching of your left thumb to hit them when you're, you know, when you're trying to perform a lot of actions at once. I feel like it's not a very smooth function.
Now that you're playing it, are there any things that you feel are just missing from the library?
Oh, yeah. I think I was really surprised that Chrono Trigger didn't make it to the list. And after hunting through, like, as soon as I got this out of the box, my whole family wanted to play. And so I had us just taking turns on all sorts of multiplayer games. And it was super disappointing that Super Bomberman also didn't show up, because that was another game that I played a ton of when I was a kid. Like, I probably rented that game enough times to buy it twice over. So that's one that I was thinking of that would have been a real blast for multiplayer. And then Donkey Kong Country, which I think is impossibly hard. I still haven't beaten it to this day, not for lack of trying, but Donkey Kong Country 2 would have been a great addition as well for like two-player games.
Oh, ActRaiser would have been great too. This weird platformer.
I, I never got to play that, but I heard quite a bit of disappointment when the list got announced that ActRaiser didn't make it in.
Yeah.
What about you, Neil? I know that there were some things that you wanted on this list that didn't make the cut.
Saturday Night Slam Masters is
that a basketball game?
It's actually a pro wrestling game with characters from Final Fight. Well, one character from Final Fight.
Is it the governor?
Yeah, the mayor?
Yeah, the mayor.
Yeah. I can't think of his name now. But
Hogar.
Yes, it's him.
Hogar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Hogar.
Hagar.
Hagar. That sounds better because I was like, no, Hodor?
Hold the door. One that Tiffany said was blatantly missing is Kirby Dream Land 3. Especially when the one Kirby game they have on there is like the mini game collection Kirby game.
That's Kirby Superstar?
Yeah.
Yeah, they also have Kirby's Dream Course, which I haven't played yet, and I don't know anything about it.
Think of it as being like mini golf in a way. So it's enjoyable. I think that's a good multiplayer game. I'm kind of surprised it's on there. When there are some other games that I maybe would have put in place, but yeah, still like Chrono Trigger is still the big one to me that feels like it's missing. Although part of me now is kind of trying to justify that if you want to play Chrono Trigger now, you should probably pick a version that has the extra dungeons and bridges the gap between Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. I think.
Yeah, but there were titles that could have gone to make room for it.
Oh, definitely.
Pretty easily.
Did they really need to make room for it, though?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they could have also just put it on there, but they also could have cut Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
But then how would anyone know about some of the characters that are on Super Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite? Like, what's his name from Super Ghouls and Ghosts? Arthur.
Arthur that likes to get naked?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I understand that this console, for the most part, is trying to be extremely faithful. Like, that's also why there's a lack of a home button on any of the controllers. But my biggest issue with, or my biggest question mark about this console came when I was playing Super Ghosts and Goblins or Ghouls and whatever the fuck it is. I've never played that on an actual Super Nintendo, so I don't know what the slowdown is like in that game. But you go anywhere within the first level, like halfway through it, and you start to get more enemies and more environmental changes, which is kind of interesting for that era too, mind you. It is a good game, and I think that one has to stay just based upon its difficulty and the, I guess, like the diversity of play. But the slowdown is so painful. Like, we're talking a matter of maybe 5 to 10 frames a second, or maybe less than that at some point. And it's not like it's just jittery, so it's like still going the same speed, but it's actual hardware slowdown. So it's kind of like playing with slow motion turned on.
Yeah, there are some games that I needed that for Super Nintendo games, though. So.
Yeah, and you definitely need it for that game, because holy shit, it's still hard.
Yeah, it's
for
not
me to
always
get past the first
level. Feature that I complain about for older games because of their difficulty and sometimes how janky controls can be. I appreciate like frame rate drops. Obviously, it's not something I'd like to tolerate in my modern games, but I'm actually happy that they kind of kept it in.
I'm just wondering if it was actually that bad on hardware.
Yeah, there's no way to know without doing as best of a side-by-side comparison as you can.
Which I'm going to have to look that up at some point in time. Mm-hmm. But Cookie, we've been talking a lot about the SNES Classic, but what have you been playing?
So, I haven't been playing much besides the old Destiny 2. I finally hit the, like, official grind wall. I just made it to light level 280, and that took about a week after hitting 275. And I'm still not mad at it. Like, I know this grind wall really hurt me in Destiny 1. Destiny 2 seems kind of like there's enough to do, and yet not enough to do at the same time, that it didn't really bother me all that much. While I was in Augusta, I rented Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite because my uncle really wanted to play, and we're huge Marvel vs. Capcom fans. I made the executive decision not to pick this game up, even though I'm your guys' resident like fighting game person, just because the demo of the game like rubbed me really the wrong way. The actual game, though, really, really solid. I liked it a lot better than I thought I would. The like demo that's available on the PlayStation 4 right now is a story demo, and the story mode is paced awfully. It's just not a good story at all. And like most of the fights in the story mode are just like fodder fights. So you're fighting like nameless characters that go down in a couple of hits, but you still have to go through the loading screen of fight, loading screen, cutscene, loading screen, fight, loading screen, cutscene, loading screen, fight. And I don't like that. That's actually what turned me off to Destiny 1 so quickly with the grind. Destiny 2 doesn't have that. And I just downloaded this morning Golf Story for the Nintendo Switch. For anyone who watches Steven Universe, Golf Quest Mini is a Steven Universe game that he plays. It's kind of like Pokemon, but it's an RPG about golf. And then, ironically, Golf Story is an RPG about golf. Don't know anything about it besides that. Kind of excited to play, though.
How much was that?
20?
That's a steep price to go on a hunch, but I might buy it as well.
Well, you know, there's a RPG about a sport that's two-dimensional, and right before we started this episode, I was playing a quick game. So there's like the actual story mode and quick game, which allows you just to play the golf holes. And the golf is actually not that bad. It's actually kind of solid golf. It's got a meter. It's the two-button press meter. So you press A to make the meter go for power, and then it hits the top of its thing, and you press A when it starts going back down to get the accuracy shot.
Interesting. Okay.
There were little gophers that if the ball landed within like their radial circle, that were kind of unfairly big because it's 2D. How can you have like not unfairly big sprites on this small golf course? They would like move the ball somewhere inconvenient for you.
So you're going to have a quest to eliminate the gophers from the field later.
I don't know. This could be a story about finding my father for all I know. That's a harken back to Golf Quest Mini, which is what Steven was doing. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, so no clue what the story's going to be. I'm kind of interested, though. Good, looks really good 2D-wise. Not, you know, Octopath Traveler HD 2D good, but, you know, probably SNES Classic good.
Speaking of that, have you played any more Octopath Traveler, or are we all ready to unload on our thoughts so far?
I am ready to unload on my thoughts so far of Octopath Traveler. I finally beat that final boss guy, and he finally died. I think I vaguely mentioned this during the last episode. Don't remember how much of that I was actually in. Oh, and I vaguely hinted at a game I was playing, which was Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Doesn't matter though now. But yeah, finally beat the boss and kind of saw what it had to offer, Octopath Traveler. I may be passing.
Ooh, okay. It didn't draw you in as much as it needed to.
So we're going to spoil the Dancer's storyline during this conversation, since
we've all done it. Yeah.
Or I should actually know, which maybe brings up talking about the battle system some, that when I played it, I didn't really want to grind because it's a demo. Like, I don't really necessarily want to spend that much time on it. I just kind of want to see what the game offers. So I got to the boss at level 3 or 4, and it occurred to me that I was not going to ever beat the boss at level 3 or 4.
Yes.
So I ended up setting it down, and my girlfriend Tiffany ended up picking it up, and I just watched her play it. And I've got to say, and she finished it. And I do have to say that for someone that hasn't played Bravely Default before, but has been told what it is that game kind of plays like in terms of I call it turn stacking. It's a somewhat interesting take on your otherwise traditional turn-based battle system.
With the, being able to, boost a thing after every turn?
Yeah, where you get basically each turn you have a new... I'm calling it turn stack because I can't remember exactly what it's called, but using those turn stacks enables you to attack twice or to charge up your skills.
Yeah, well, in Bravely Default, for instance, I'm pretty sure it was called Bravely Defaulting. Or just defaulting. But yeah, the mechanic was the title of the game, more or less.
So you can't cowardly default?
No. You have to be bold.
Guys, I default. Boldly. But I didn't mind the combat. It was fine. I think the main reason I'll be passing on it is because I had to grind for the demo. And I feel as if the payoff wasn't good enough, really, honestly.
Yeah, demo grinding kind of sucks, in my opinion, as well. If you're just trying to get a taste of the game, why spend a bunch of time in a super limited area grinding just on, two common enemies over and over?
Just the tiniest, at least for the, it looks like the other guy has a bigger area to grind over. But the dancer just had the 20 square feet of dungeon to explore.
Yeah, she had a little
sewer.
Yeah, sewer.
It's like if you're trying to impress me upon your setting, not saying that I feel badly about this game, but speaking
on... Well, the sewer was good for the lighting, so they could really show that kind of difference between the shading on otherwise...
Torch.
Yeah, 2D pixels. It was really good lighting. It was cool and displayed that kind of visual technology well.
You know what also would have been cool to showcase your lighting? A mysterious cavern filled with skeletons.
Wait, so you saw the other dungeon area?
No, I'm just implying that a sewer. Do we also need to go fight some rats as our first enemies? A sewer.
No, dung beetles.
It was dung beetles, Neil. It was dung beetles.
For rats, personally.
It depends, I guess, what country you're from, right? Rats are traditionally, I think, the Western RPG gimmick.
And slimes are the Eastern.
Yeah. So that turn stacking defaulting mechanic is interesting. But it doesn't necessarily, if you're trying to min-max, if you will, min-maxing at the start of that game and some of those initial encounters isn't very, rewarding. So you would occasionally get into a battle with two monsters, and I don't remember what they were, but they were tankier, and they both had a guard rating of 1. So you could break their guard and also break or take away their turn by hitting them once. So you could ultimately end up hitting each enemy twice with the turn stacking, but it still didn't deal a great amount of damage, and then you would rotate to the other one on the next turn. So you would end up using one, or it might have been two stacks, I don't recall, but regardless, you're basically guard breaking and then guard breaking, and in doing so, you're removing any possibility of getting hit, which would be ideal because you don't want to take damage since you're only allotted so many health items and you're sure as hell not going back to town for a demo, or at least I'm not.
But you got to go back to town to get the that one person who's standing in town and court him so that way he has the slice feature.
Oh, I courted someone at the start of that game, before I even left the sewer, or left for the sewer. So,
oh, nice. So
I had that foresight.
I did not.
But yeah, there's an element of concern that I have if the early game is going to be this kind of this much of a time suck. I'm worried that you're going to continue to have long, grindy parts as you get further in the game. But I mean, maybe that's the benefit behind having a portable system here, because you have all the time in the world when you're on a plane to grind.
Yeah, but is grinding fun? Grinding's still a chore.
I think we watched an anime about this. Sorry, the last episode of Gamers, they were talking about that as well.
Yeah.
Anyway. Another reason to reference back to Bravely Default and maybe how this game could have taken some more cues from it. Bravely Default lets you raise your gameplay speed, and it lets you also, like, it lets you grind by just hitting start, if I remember correctly, and your characters would just automatically go into a, like, melee rush combat, and then you didn't have to hit another button until it was done. I don't know if it was start. I just remember you could activate an auto battle system, and then you could bring up the enemy encounter rate to 200%, between 0 and 200 was selectable. And you could just roam around an area and keep, you know, battling monsters. It was still a grind, but if you think about how much time you save with at least them altering or reducing the grind mechanic for people who don't want to do that, and I don't see why anyone wouldn't, then you're able to get a lot of the, like, more boring and really useless portion of the game out of the way. If there's no progression in the story and your characters are just progressing by building up a greater pool of health and mana, what's really that enjoyable about having the same fight with common enemies over and over and over again?
Can you do that in this one?
No, I don't think so.
At least not in the demo.
And I really wish that they did have a mechanic like that. Like, that was one thing that I wanted to applaud Bravely Default for more than anything else. If I'm going to play a JRPG that has grinding, at least make it as painless as possible. And
also,
letting
can
people
I skip
modify. Yeah, and
oh,
skipping
that's actually
cutscenes.
Right here. God
yeah,
damn.
Yeah. I put that in all caps. Like, Cookie, Neil, you guys both fought the final boss, right?
I fought the final boss about 7 or 8 times.
Yeah, I
wow.
fought the final boss maybe
wow.
3 times. Do you, that's
well,
so
I didn't
much
know
dialogue
I could court a guy.
To scroll through.
It is, but I didn't know I could court a dude, so like after I courted the guy, I had to fight the boss like 2 more times after that, because I was like, okay, need to court this guy. He's got the slice future where he can get this thing out of the way, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no, a lot of dialogue to just constantly mash A through to get through, or B through, whatever. Doesn't
yeah,
matter.
And I courted like a crappy villager who just increased my speed, which really didn't do anything. Like, I didn't get any extra turns out of it, and you don't get like an extra attack, and I don't think I got a boost to my critical hits. And so I was like, what was the point of summoning you besides soaking like 3 attacks when I've got all these luscious grapes that restore 250 health or something?
Luscious grapes. That's
I don't remember what
the
grapes were
the
called,
dancer.
But they were really good.
So the thing I maybe want to drive home, though, on the positive side, is that the story, I was actually expecting it to be more guarded or family-friendly. And yes, there are some dialogue changes I hope happen before the game is out, but I know aren't.
What are you talking about, kitten?
wait, say that again, sorry.
I said, what are you talking about, kitten?
Oh, is that what he's referring to her as a lot?
Yes,
yeah,
he's yeah
calling her a kitten,
that's his
because
nickname
she's just,
for his
because he's just pussy to her.
Yeah,
I mean, she's just pussy to him.
Oh,
yeah.
Are you ready for my my quick confessional? It never occurred to me that's why they used kitten.
Really? Okay. All right.
Well, so
did
so
you,
just
did you think
just
it was
like
just
the
cute
things,
pet name.
There was just a little, but yeah, that's exactly what I'm pointing out. There's a little too much send you to the next dimension going on, despite the fact that we are, it's more than confirmed that this woman has been willing to essentially whore herself out to get her interests into place. And like, I wanted to say that I actually commend them for having such a dark plot for one of your characters right out from the gate.
Makes sense. It is kind of like it's a Nintendo Wii. Oh, Switch. What system are you playing on? It's a Nintendo product.
Cookie doesn't know how he got it on his Game Boy Color, but
it's just that like you don't oftentimes find a lot of JRPGs that are willing to go real dark. And oh, actually, you know, and speaking of dark, you implied a couple episodes ago that there was like the death scene of 2017 within the dancer's arc.
That's right.
Oh yeah. His death scene?
What death scene?
He's like when, dancing when kill, at the end. He does a yeah, little when flourishing you kill spin. Gilvage,
and he goes, for like 7 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to imply that the girl, the other dancer who gets stabbed and pushed off the cliff, that was like really heart-wrenching. And I was just like, well...
I didn't really care about that.
I've only known her name for like 30 minutes now.
I thought that her roll down the environment was pretty good. Like,
it was.
She just tumbles across.
Which I was fully expecting to have to traverse some of that land in like a new area before that boss battle starts, because they're on a cliff. Like, they're going to have to jump down 20 feet to get to you. And by
that point...
Did
you see how big that guy was, though? I don't know how he did it sitting in a chair the whole time. But.
That is totally... I don't know what Bravely Default looks like off the top of my head, but that artwork in particular reminds me so much of Final Fantasy 4-6 in terms of the monster artwork, where, you know, the characters are chibi, you know, 10 pixel tall sprites, and then the bosses are static images that look like fantastic in comparison to the sprites. The sprites still look good, mind you, but...
The bosses weren't static in this game, though. They had actions and movements that would happen every once in a while. They had idle animations.
Right. They do have a little bit of but like in comparison to 4 and 6, the boss work was static, and so they were able to put like more detail into.
Gotcha, I see.
Yeah. But either way, I liked it. The pixel art looked good. I don't think we said the comment of the battles can be a little long.
Yeah, that
boss battle took way too long for a demo.
Yeah, it did take a really long time, and I don't know. I was hoping one of you guys might have gotten really excited and into it, because I was like, I want to hear more about this game. This story's got me interested, but I really don't think I can play this battle system through the whole game.
I don't think I could play this game. So I liked the idea of just selecting the main guy, because Scott, you wandered around after, right, and made it to the second town?
No, I didn't. I wandered around after, and then I'm like, wow, I'm not finding anything. It's late. I'm going to go to bed.
So, yes, you make it to the second town, and you actually meet the knight. You click A at the knight, and then it goes into this little thing of saying, oh, yeah, you can put someone else in your battle. You can put someone else in your party, one of the main characters, at pretty much any time, and they just give them to you. So we don't know like exactly how that happens.
Gotcha.
But you get him, and then you've got three people fighting with you. One that you can summon, and one that's the knight. Or the other guy.
Yeah, the only thing that probably helped me make the decision to not continue forward and find out is because after you beat the guy, they like you get the little splash screen, right? That says like,
Thank you for playing
Octopath Traveler. And I was like, oh, I guess it's done. And I started exploring. I was like, is this a mistake? and then I decided, you know, like, well, I already got the thank you for playing, so there's probably not much more left. Screw it. And so I just exited afterward and went to bed.
You can eventually find the town, which is why when you said, Neil, a cave with skeletons all around, because after you get the guy, you get to explore his little dungeon area, which is a cave with skeletons.
Oh, wait. So when you say you get the guy, he joins your party, but you're still using the dancer as your main character. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So you use the dancer's summon ability to summon the person that's following you around, but the other guy's still just in there and you can control him.
All right. Just making sure, because, yeah, it definitely screams Romancing Saga at me, the way this game is played out, where I'm assuming if you chose the knight at the start of the game, you would go through his unique intro, and then the world opens up, and you could go and get the dancer and so forth. Yeah, this is totally a Saga-style game. I just kind of wish that some of our complaints were not founded. And maybe they won't be on the official release.
Maybe.
But I'm also not hoping for much. I will probably end up buying this game because, I've played grindier games. It's just I really would prefer not to play another grindy game in the future.
I don't want to grind like this. I want to, like...
Cookie wants to bump and grind.
Pretty much. I kind of want to, like, I want to grind with the thought of freaking Zelda Breath of the Wild, where it's less of a grind because I have to and more of a grind because there's just that much, like, stuff to do. I can wander around, pick up and go. I don't have to know what's going on in the story to know what I'm doing. Whereas this seems like I'm going to have to know, like, I can't, like, put this down for a couple of months, pick it up and be like, oh yeah, this is where I'm going. Where Destiny's like, it's four different planets. They've got clearly indicated things about what you're doing, so I can put that down and be like, all right, I got 20 minutes. Let me knock out two adventures and maybe do a strike or two. Play some multiplayer. Got this.
Well, boy.
This seems like it's going to be grindy in the opposite way of I can't complete the story without doing something.
I think I have a game that you might enjoy then. This is one of two games I picked up, or one of a few games I picked up, but one of two I'll be talking about. It's called Heat Signature, and it's from the makers, I guess, technically, but primarily the creator of Gunpoint. If you didn't play Gunpoint, Gunpoint's a fucking great game, and I think everyone should play it, especially because I'm sure it goes for sale on Steam for less than a couple dollars. But Heat Signature, similar to Gunpoint, in that it rewards players for being hypercritical about how they solve problems in a puzzle-like way. What kind of problems are we looking at? Well, Heat Signature's primary game mechanic or gameplay is based around being in space, using your very small spaceship to go and attach to larger spaceships, going in and doing a combination of murdering people, stealing items, hijacking the ship, or rescuing people. Any sort of combination of those things, or all at once. Now, where Gunpoint was more about infiltrating office buildings and dealing with security, and it was all in real time, Heat Signature allows you to pause and also slow down times in multiple ways. So it really, really wants you to spend as long as you want figuring out how you want to go about killing a bunch of people or subduing them or getting past them through stealth. And how you do those things is, like, you're given your basic weapons like guns, shotguns, but you're also given things like long swords or short swords or wrenches, other melee things. But where it gets really great is through these special items that allow you to, say, switch places with a person. So if a guy shoots at you, you can then use an item to switch places with him. So he teleports to where you were at and vice versa, and he ends up shooting himself. Or you have devices that will basically let you do a form of a dash. It's not even a teleport because there has to be a clear path. So you can simply dash around and avoid gunshots or attacks that way. You also have traps that if you lay them down, you can shoot them to other parts of the ship or actually shoot them out to space and let them suffocate. I'm trying to think of what else. Grenades, mines.
So this, I'm kind of watching the Steam videos on this. This looks like a less bloody, gruesome, kind of a much bigger version of Hotline Miami.
Yeah, that I should have opened up with that. It feels and plays like Hotline Miami, except speed is not a thing. You don't have to go fast, but you can go fast.
Is there an option to pause at any point in time? That's nice,
all.
Too.
And while you're paused, that's when you can also line up elaborate shots and stuff. So if you have to work out a really tough angle throwing a grenade into a room and making sure you're going to get close to hitting everyone or you're going to hit everyone, that sort of thing, it will allow you to do that. Or if you need to say, like, you have to time everything perfectly. As you enter a room with three people, you need to be able to use a dash strike to kill someone with your sword and then be able to turn around and shoot one guy in time and then switch with the other guy after he's shot. You can simply just pause after each action and do this, like, you know, take your time with it. The more you play, the more adept you get at those things, so it ultimately speeds up So like what may take you 1 minute to set up beforehand will take you 20 seconds or 10 seconds down the road.
How does the difficulty progress with this game then? As you get more adept, how does the AI or enemies respond? Is it pretty difficult still?
It, for me so far, has been based more on how many people are there and how well equipped they are, because there are going to be enemies with armor that your normal weapons won't be able to destroy or pierce unless you have an armor-piercing weapon. Or there might be enemies or like a bunch of traps around or like turrets, so you have to find a way to hack them and so on. Now, one of the things though is that like as a rogue light game, meaning that these ships get generated at random, procedurally, I guess you could say, there's a question, and then like the idea, as I was saying, of grinding. Like, how does grinding work into this with these randomly generated chips or procedurally generated chips? Basically, you start off with like very fundamental gear to begin with, but as you liberate more space stations and sectors of space, you get access to more technology and so forth. And likewise, the harder missions are going to, and you always have the choice between easy, moderate, or medium and hard missions. So if you feel confident enough going in with like crappy items, you can go and tackle hard missions right away. And it's possible. It does take a lot of time. But in terms of difficulty, I would say that like everything's possible with basically the base bare bones of your equipment, like a wrench, a simple melee weapon, but it's a matter of how long you're willing to wait and plan things around to make it happen. So the game gets more difficult as you get more hasty and more confident in your actions. I know I'm jumping around a bit here, but another thing that the game does is it gives you four different characters to choose from, and they all have their own different inventories and monetary their bank accounts, I guess you could say, and there's permadeath involved too. So as I'm playing one character and get him or her to like a late game, so to speak, my other three characters are still going to be at whatever stage I left them at.
Oh, that's cool.
I might end up like this happened to me exactly last night. I was playing my favorite character that has a bunch of items that cater around my playstyle, and I just got too cocky because I had a lot of good shit, and I ended up getting hit from behind, or like from like a hallway I wasn't paying attention to. I get shot out into space, and I don't remember exactly how it happens. I remote controlled my space pod to pick me up, and I drove back around or flew back around to the ship to try and dock, but they spotted me and they ended up shooting my ship, in which case I was running on reserves of fuel. So I could not get back to my friendly space station in time, so I ended up drifting off into space, and I wasn't sure if there was a way to go and get another guy to go save them, because I didn't know where I was.
But that sounds awesome.
That does sound wonderful.
It's pretty good. Like, the gameplay is a little... I mean, It takes some time to get used to, and I don't necessarily think it's for anyone, because I personally like don't like the Miami Hotline, right?
Hotline Miami,
Jesus, style that much. I think it feels maybe a little too free feeling at times, if that makes sense.
You mean like a little bit too think on your toes? You're going to make this work eventually?
Nah, it feels too much like a flash game, and I don't know why that bothers me.
Okay. I like what Suspicious Development's got going on.
Yeah, this really seems to be their thing with the games that they've developed, is very tactical, very, like, go at your own pace and difficulty. Like, be as complex as you want to be, and be as cautious as you want to be, or try and go ahead and storm a room and be a hero.
So maybe my only complaint about this game is that Gunpoint had a lot of character and humor behind it, whereas Heat Signature has character. It doesn't necessarily have the humor, but you're not playing, like, the story is much more what you construct and create.
That makes sense.
Gunpoint is more about being a, basically like a more serious, but still comically fueled Inspector Gadget.
I could dig it. Gunpoint actually looks like the more interesting of the two games for me. I was watching the video on that one as well.
You should play it. That I would like this. I would like Gunpoint a lot more if you were able to pause and do things in a time fashion, or you know, pause in the middle of the action like you do in Heat Signature. And I kind of just wish he would take it back to that and just make more Gunpoint levels, because, like, after playing Heat Signature, I kind of just want to go back and replay Gunpoint. This other game I played, I'm not going to go too far into the details, but what I'm going to have the two of you do is play it alongside me. Or I guess really I'm only there just to make sure that, you
know, we get through it.
Yeah. And like, there are a few things that I didn't realize until significantly being a significant portion through this game and wishing I had, because it would have changed the way I would have played it. But Local Host is a pretty small, interesting game about deleting hard drives. And that's all I'm going to say about it for now.
Makes me nervous. My hard drive can't be deleted. That's going to be my only caveat for playing it.
Maybe you'll think twice about that after playing Local Host.
Oh, maybe I'll want it deleted.
but only after you send me audio.
This game was so horrible. Just burn everything.
Burn it all. Yeah, I'll build a new PC.
Well, I think I've dwelled a little much on Heat Signature. How about we open up that hot pot?
Okay.
It didn't sound nearly as fancy this time.
I thought it was fine. It was fine. Oh, okay. Anyway. We've got two pots boiling today. So first and foremost in the hot pot, the Wii Shop channel will be shutting down in January. And that means some games are going to be gone for good, at least with the more recent iterations of Nintendo hardware and virtual console access. So we have some classics like Super Smash Bros. That once this virtual console, once the availability of these virtual console titles is pulled from the Wii Shop channel in January, there won't be any formal place to play it besides either with the original game and its corresponding hardware, or with emulators until we see either the Nintendo Switch have it on their shop channel, which currently it doesn't have a virtual console, so
it does not, because they're going to come out with the N64 Classic, then they're going to come out with the Wii Classic, then they're going to come out with the GameCube Classic.
I mean, it is kind of a way to push purchases towards the classic systems, is to take away an alternative to play them.
I can't wait till they come out with the Pokemon Classic. I mean, Game Boy Classic.
Oh, the Game Boy Classic, yeah. I'd love to play.
It's going to be so small, it's just going to be a Tamagotchi.
But yeah, so there are some... There's a list, I believe, that's up on Polygon that lists all of the games that are going to be removed due to the Wii's virtual console and Wii Shop channel going down. And there's maybe a couple that are worth noting, but I mean, there's also going to be plenty that you've probably never heard of. I certainly haven't heard of. Classics like JJ and Jeff or Nom 1975. But
have you ever searched up Cho Aniki before?
Cho Aniki?
I would like you to Google it. It's Cho space Aniki.
Isn't Aniki like brother? Oh wow, all right.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
maybe these games should go away.
No, that's
can I please have this?
Yeah, this game looks amazing.
This game looks like it should have what's his name from Full Metal Alchemist in it, the Armstrong guy.
It's his name's Armstrong, I think. But yeah, it's we're going to be missing out on classics like Chouanaki soon. So if you still have a Wii and you want to play classics like...
Oh my god, Chouanaki was on the Sega Saturn? Oh, yeah, man. Got to get this now.
Yeah.
This looks...
really, yeah. Sorry. It's really tough because these are all images and our listeners can't see it. But
you really shouldn't look this up if you're at work, by the way.
Yeah, but if there was ever something that you'd want to look up to see what the hell we're talking about or looking at, this would be the time. Go find a place in which you can look at anything on your computer without feeling any sort of judgment or prying eyes, and look up Chouanaki. Because it's games like this that need to remain in circulation, and now there's one less place for them to exist. Starting,
I'm watching a
January
YouTube video on Chouanaki, and
yeah, it's a thing. So yeah. Like there are fighters and there are shooters in this series of games. It's a series of games, by the way.
Yeah,
it's a series of games.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine that the first one did exceptionally well.
I don't understand.
Okay, rolling forward. Next in the lineup. What's this
so
about?
So, I was watching a video on the Know. They give me some video news every once in a while. And apparently, people have been taking apart their SNES classics to find NES classics. So it's the same exact board that's in the NES Classic. They didn't even bother to change the shape. It fits inside an NES Classic shell.
Well, there you go, Cookie. All you have to do is get one of the two and then just mod it.
Which
just
we can, because they modded the NES Classic.
Yeah, exactly. Or get your SNES Classic and then mod it backwards into a NES Classic.
The only difference here is that if you got the NES Classic, you'd have to get
buy an extra controller.
Yeah, you'd have to get the Classic controllers in order to play anything other than NES games.
So we'll all just get the SNES Classic. It doesn't matter. Either way, I just found that interesting that the shortages of NES Classics happened, and it's quite literally because it sounds like they were just making the SNES Classics.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it? Hey, we have to stop making this thing because we have to make the exact same thing, just with a different case.
Pretty much.
And we have to make enough of them. So, I mean, we know that Nintendo has issues getting certain parts and pieces. So there's a level of...
What, forgiveness? From some of us, maybe.
Yeah,
Not from Cookie.
It doesn't necessarily mean we can forgive them of all wrongdoings, but it certainly makes sense knowing that they're the exact same thing, that there's a reason why they needed to stop production for the NES Classic so they could start prepping for the SNES Classic, at least I assume.
Yeah. That was just a thing. I figured it was a quick hot pot thing.
Following the spirit of quick hot pot things, it's going to be a little late for our listeners at this point to capitalize on this information, but Fallout, the original 1997 post-nuclear role-playing game, was free on Steam.
You say was.
Today is Sunday. Yeah, it was only free for a little bit more than a 24-hour period.
Saturday.
Wait. Yeah, okay. So here's the... I found the time frame. It was available Friday night to 11:59 p.m. on Saturday night, which is 2:59 a.m. October 1st Eastern Time for the United States, for people to go ahead and actually install the game and add it to their Steam library for free in celebration of its 20th anniversary launch. So for anybody who is lucky enough to grab it, this is just such a nice little treat. I mean, the game is... It's 20 years old at this point, and yet I know of at least a couple people who have played Fallout 3 as the original Fallout game, or as the first one that they have ever experienced, and gone back to enjoy Fallout and Fallout 2, which are incredibly different in a multitude of ways and still have a great time. Like, it's a very wonderful experience if you're fresh to the Fallout world, maybe even if you've only played Fallout 4, but it's significantly different.
That, you know, one could argue is much better than Fallout 3 and 4.
Yeah, you could certainly argue that, especially for, say, like the story and the dialogue. Like, there's a lot of really good writing in these first two Fallout games, and the actual gameplay is not a sort of first-person shooter RPG like Fallout 3, New Vegas, and Fallout 4 have been, which also means that it's a completely different way to play the game, too. It's much more similar to its predecessor, Wasteland. And so, it's something to check out. Of course, for anybody who wasn't able to capitalize on it, you'll have to buy it
for $10
on the Steam store. Or you might be able to find it on Good Old Games or GOG.com. Though, I remember it was free there at one point in time. I don't know if it still is. But it was certainly a newsworthy event to have a free crack at a really exceptional classic game.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I did. I got it on my computer. I originally had it in college from a free download from GOG. And unfortunately, that laptop is no longer in use. And so I didn't ever transfer it over or save the file. And so I'm happy to have it back, but I've never gotten to actually finish a complete playthrough because I picked it up in college and I got busy during the middle of playing the game and never went back. So once I can get through the like rough hour again of re-acclimating myself to like the menus and building a character that doesn't die to rats trying to leave the vault, I'm excited to put some time back into this and maybe finish the first game.
Well, I missed that free one day of Fallout, so I will never play it.
It's okay, Cookie. I know. I might know a way to get you hooked up with a copy of Fallout.
Yeah,
it's called.
If you care, if you even care, which might be the harder barrier to overcome.
Like, yes, it might be on vaporware websites at this point still. So, or abandonware, I should say. Well, last on our list, we have Rockstar's new trailer for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Best quote I've heard so far was, Cookie, so we're the bad guy? And I haven't played Red Dead Redemption, but I'm going to assume we're a bandit, aren't we, Neil?
Yeah, Red Dead Redemption 1, you are a reformed bandit who gets stuck or sucked back into the world of banditing.
Unless banditry. You're me, and then once you get sucked back into the world of banditing, you get bored of the game and just start kidnapping damsels and putting them on train tracks.
I mean, that doesn't seem like something Marston would do, but okay.
I started doing that.
Does he have a mustache?
I think he did.
As long as he's got a mustache
to twirl, there should be no reason you shouldn't.
Nope. Unfortunately, it was not long enough to twirl.
Not long enough to twirl, unfortunately. Which is why all the trains, I didn't know the train schedule, so like when I'd take them out to like abandoned places, I'd sit there for like 10 minutes waiting for a train. I'd give up and just leave them on the train track. Never to know their fate.
So, the trailer looks like Red Dead Redemption.
Yay, we're the bad guy. I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that it takes place in, before Red Dead Redemption 1. You're playing as someone within Marston's old gang or crew.
Mm. Ah, so it's a prequel sequel.
A prequel sequel.
Yeah. And your character doesn't seem like reformed is necessarily fair to put on their title. It seems like you're going to be performing bad acts.
Purposely.
You might have a heart of gold, but you also have pockets lined with coin.
Before I go into like weird opinions about Red Dead, I'm curious, what did you guys think of it overall? Like, does it look good? Were you interested by the movie-like trailer itself without a whole lot of focus on the gameplay elements?
Yeah, there isn't much demonstrated for gameplay at all with this. And games, open world kind of sandbox games like this, it'd be really nice to know kind of what the interesting or cool capabilities are in this game. Because if it's ride a horse and shoot some old guns, like, that may be enough of a draw for some people, especially if they played the original Red Dead Redemption. Then, you know, good for them, but that's not enough of a draw for me. But Rockstar is also known for making really good stories, and I do love a cowboy western, so I don't know what my feelings are on it yet. If I have a windfall of cash around the time that it releases, then maybe I'll pick it up for the hell of it. But otherwise, there's not a big enough motivating factor just yet for me to look into catching up on the Red Dead Redemption series, since I already missed the first game.
But this one's before the first game.
Yeah, I know, which actually, that means I'll know all the prerequisite knowledge, and then I can go back and play a really old game.
Yeah, see? I'm pushing Red Dead Redemption 2 extra hard, because I'm not getting it. The first one, as you might have heard, did not tickle my fancy enough to keep me enthralled through. It's got the open world story, I can't beat it thing going on. At least Red Dead Redemption 1 had it. The reason I was never able to beat, like, a Grand Theft Auto game. Except for Grand Theft Auto 5. No, I still didn't beat Grand Theft Auto 5. I got far in it. Lots of stuff was going down. I think I was on the last heist of Grand Theft Auto 5 when I stopped.
See, I bounced off of Red Dead primarily because of two reasons. The first one is that the shooting wasn't very good. It didn't feel good to me. And in a game where you are a gunslinger, or a reformed gunslinger, trying to be at least, the shooting is important.
Oh, yeah. You have to have tight controls for your like gunplay and aim if you're going to be shooting guns that have six shots in them or they're bolt action.
See, that's why you need to play Call of Juarez.
What makes the gun shooting in that different?
There's a cover system and it's first person, maybe? I don't know.
There is a cover system in Red
Dead.
But
it's third person.
Right, which I actually prefer for the most part. But it's like, if you weren't using your bullet time insta-lock thing, it just felt terrible. It like is better than Fallout 3, but not by much. Whereas I know Rockstar is capable of making, you know, good shooting controls at this point, because 5 feels perfectly fine. And I don't really know how to illustrate the difference between my competency in 5... In GTA 5, I don't know if I said that wrong, but in GTA 5, as opposed to Red Dead Redemption, but something's different there. And if you look at a previous game, like GTA 3, their solution to not having good shooting at that point in time was to just give you a lock-on. Where if that existed in Red Dead Redemption, it would have made the game significantly better, at least in that aspect of it. And maybe the... Like, it became evident to me early on when you have to shoot a bunch of coyotes or wolves killing your chickens, where it's like, I am a fucking badass ex-bandit, and I can't fire my gun at these fucking dogs or wolves.
I don't remember this mission.
Like, these wolves are too good at dodging. Yeah, there's that disconnect. Where, you know, in complete contrast, a game that does a really good job of letting you feel like you are who you are playing as is Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, where, yeah, it feels like your guy can do way too much based on, like, your bullet time slowdowns and so forth, and the amount of things you can do are crazy, but it's also because you're the best soldier in the world.
Speaking of Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain, that's going to be free on PlayStation Plus.
Which, have you played it, Cookie? You didn't
no,
like
I played
Ground Zeroes,
Ground
right?
Zero. I played like a tiny, tiny bit of Ground Zero. So I'll install it because they're giving it to me for free, and I'll probably touch it a little bit because they're giving it to me for free.
Yeah, I'm really curious as to how you'll feel about that game. Anywho, the other aspect that really got me with Red Dead was that so many mechanics in that game seem built around being a complete douchebag. But at the same time, the game doesn't let you go all in to become that bad person. This example is not one I personally feel like needed to change, but I think it helps illustrate this weird, half-hearted commitment to the character of John Marston. But so John Marston is, in the fiction, this reformed bandit that then gets pulled back because of his past to do bad shit again. Although he ultimately is, he's the black hat hero, if you will, as opposed to like the white hat hero.
He's a gray hat.
Does he actually have a gray hat? Well, yeah, but yeah, that's basically it. He's the anti-hero protagonist. My issue is that they go so far as to make him comment and stuff when it comes to like prostitutes and other women proposing, what's the term? But you know, basically coming on to him, he's like, "Nope, married man can't do that." Which I think that's cool. That's a good way to instill more character into your character through mechanics and so forth, or like small storytelling. Yet at the same time, you can go and, as you were just saying, Cookie, you can go and take a damsel and put her in distress by putting her on train tracks.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't make sense from a game design standpoint for me that you can allow him to do really fucking terrible shit, even though he's supposedly now an honorable person.
Whereas Grand Theft Auto V solved that problem wonderfully.
Yeah,
you Trevor.
You can be Trevor, or if you're Michael and you're doing terrible things, he talks about doing terrible things to his shrink.
Yeah. But you don't feel like the need to do terrible things as Michael because you've got Trevor, and like as soon as you, whenever you just switch to Trevor, he usually says something that puts you in a mindset, or he's in the middle of beating someone and it puts you in that mindset of, I am Trevor, fuck everything.
Exactly. And that's maybe one thing. Like, I'm assuming Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to have better shooting. And I'm also assuming that if they're putting you into a character that is already doing terrible shit from what we've seen, like, I'm just hoping that it allows you to take advantage of all the mechanics provided to you without making you feel like you're playing out of character. Like, if you're going to gun down a shit ton of people as Franklin in GTA 5, and Franklin was the only playable character, that wouldn't feel especially right.
Yeah, because he does have his, we're gunning down people, but he's, like, constantly saying, like, this is some fucked up shit.
Like, I really don't want to be doing this. I was trying to get, like, a standard job earlier. Man, this sucks.
Pretty much. So, but, you know, now we're saying between Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto 5, which is a few years of time between, like, the story and what they can do.
Like, 8 years, so, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know.
So, as we alluded to earlier, we got an email as we started recording, and this comes in from Dave.
Ooh, can I be Dave?
It's hot off the presses, guys.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
No edits. So, Dave, just because I don't have an inner voice for you, you should send, like, your next email that you send out. Just make it an audio file. Just send us a JPEG, and we'll just JPEG audio file.
Can you go,
send us an MP3.
Can you go buy an RE20 or RE320 from Electra Voice and an interface with enough gain? Otherwise, you can always go and buy a Cloud Lifter, which is about $150.
Anyway, so this is my day for today. Hey, just wanted to offer some thoughts on a couple of things. The game Left Alive, which will be a survival action shooter game, takes place within the Front Mission universe, a series of games from Square Enix, Squaresoft originally. It apparently takes place between the events of Front Mission 5 and Front Mission Evolve. Evolve was a clear difference from the original tactical turn-based RPG series, and this game will likely follow that trend. Does Dave seem like a person who would sound this smooth?
This kind of sounds like you're giving us a plot dump from Metal Gear Solid.
Which is actually pretty relevant, so yeah, keep it up.
All right. On the topic of Fortnite, I think that most people are feeling negatively about is that the developers are seemingly capitalizing on this Battle Royale craze, especially when that is the only current free mode for the game, and seemingly lowering focus on its unique game mode that has been in development for years. I, for one, have kept an eye on Fortnite for a while, but have little desire to cosplay a Japanese high schooler with guns. Which leads me to point out, what the hell is up with PUBG releasing Battle Royale-inspired DLC with licensing or permission from the original owners of that IP, and then complaining about their own? Dave.
So I think he forgot to include no licensing, because there's no fucking way that Blue Hole like has the go-ahead from Kadokawa or whatever fucking studio. Yeah, to basically make DLC of all of the iconic outfits from that game. So I'm pretty sure that's what he meant there. And you're right. Like that is hypocrisy right there, where a company is blatantly copying something, which we more or less slammed the whole concept of PUBG in its entirety last episode for copying something and then complaining that someone else is copying them.
And then them even going out of their way to say, oh yeah, you remember that thing that was really good that we're copying? Here are some outfits for it.
Yeah. But that is true. Like, I guess I knew Fortnite as a thing, but I guess I just never have been that interested in it to consider like how you would feel if Fortnite, which is, I think, cooperative in nature, was starting to focus on a PvP mode, which seems completely different from what the core game is. But then, like, so I didn't know, and I was kind of looking this up as we were recording. I didn't know what he meant by the only currently free mode, because I thought it was in early access right now, meaning you have to buy things. But
I thought Fortnite was free.
Well, so apparently Fortnite is going to be free to play, but the early access you have to pay to get into.
Oh, so I thought it was already out, but I'm a part of the early access on the PlayStation 4. It's interesting. I really like the concept, which is why I was like, okay, yeah, I'll dig into this for early access.
But do you have access to both game modes?
I don't know. I haven't tried to play it since they did the Battle Royale style. I kind of played like 4 or 5 missions and realized that everyone kind of just goes off and does what they want, because they put you on this big ass fucking map for Fortnite and say, here's some things, go look for some things, you'll figure it out. And pretty much the 3 other people that you're with just split. And then everyone kind of comes together at the very end to do the big build the fort, defend the thing that we've got to defend, maybe.
So that's the interesting thing. Since then, if you want to play the campaign, like what the game is designed as, you now have to pay at least $39.99, at least for PC, for Steam.
Right, but if you want to pay up to $150, you can buy all sorts of deluxe editions in between.
I mean, that's a lot of good DLC, man. Don't you knock on it. But if you want to play the Battle Royale mode, it's free. And apparently the day they launched it, they had 1 million consecutive players at once. Or that's redundant. Why did I just say at once?
I would say there is a little bit of a unique spin, too, that PUBG can't completely complain about. Or I should say PlayerUnknown can't complain about. And that is, Fortnite has this building aspect to it. Or, you know, a way to manipulate your environment. And so in the Battle Royale, there's still the opportunity to build things like platforms and brick walls and whatnot for cover.
You can still do that? Oh, yes. Sweet.
Yeah, oh, which I think is a really big difference between, say, PUBG and Fortnite in that way as well.
Like, wait, I'm curious. How long does it take to build a wall, Cookie?
It's instant.
Oh,
it's
my God. So you could have someone throwing a grenade at you, and you could build the wall and bounce it back.
It looks like it might be a little slower than instantaneous.
It's like, it takes like, about like 2 seconds for a wall to like come up.
So if you're under fire and you're trying to build a wall, it may save your life or it may be the wrong choice as you get gunned down before your wall gets up. But that's a really big tactical spin. Like, that's very different from PUBG, in which if you're out in open space and no cover, you can't just make cover happen.
I didn't realize they were still going to have that like available to you in their Battle Royale system.
Yeah, so that's a pretty distinct difference.
So I might have to check that out. Sorry to derail Dave. I just realized that I keep seeing these commercials for multiplayer version of Final Fantasy 15.
What?
Fake news.
What else is there to comment on?
No, I think we're good. We covered everything, right?
Left Alive sounds interesting, maybe.
I actually had read this up, or actually I heard him on another podcast, and I was kind of surprised because I don't necessarily know whether or not it being a Front Mission game helps my interest for it. I've really liked Front Mission 3. Front Mission 4 was kind of eh. I've played a few fan translation patches of Fallout 1, but never have gotten significantly far to know if it was good or not.
Wait, you say Fallout 1?
Fallout 1 is amazing.
Okay.
I'll put all of my promotion behind it.
If I said Fallout, I meant Front Mission, but it's just that Front Mission is all about the political landscape between the OCU, the NCS or something. It's basically just a bunch of different countries in that separate timeline or reality.
It's Metal Gear Solid 4 war economy philosophy.
Except you don't really care about Snake or Otacon or any of the characters. It's just like
that's still true when I play Metal Gear.
Oh, no. No.
You didn't like the part where he was running around naked? What?
That's Raiden anyway.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Never mind.
Metal Gear.
Like the stories in each of these games obviously relate to the cast of characters that are in them, but as a whole, what matters more is how the stories connect are the events of the nations and their wars and whatever bullshit's going on behind the scenes. So if you're going to make a game based on the Front Mission universe, are you going to bring that back in?
Are there mechs?
Yeah, Bonzas.
Oh, I want mechs. I like mechs.
The mechs are super cool in Front Mission. Like they're not anime mecha. They're more a combination of humanoid mech with tank like properties.
Which is the best kind of mech? Giant robots fight.
But yeah, it's Square Enix. My guess is that they're probably going to end up using, unless they've licensed out the engine for Metal Gear Solid 5, which I don't think there's any precedent to think that's going to be the case. I just know that people are talking about this looking like Metal Gear Solid 5. I imagine they're probably using the Final Fantasy 15 engine. Because why not?
Makes sense. It was a pretty enough engine.
And it certainly looked like that game could have been an action game as opposed to an action RPG. I still can't get over survival. Does that mean I need to, hunt for snakes?
Maybe. You cut out real bad for me, so
I didn't hear a word you said.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, pretty much.
What I said was, in terms of it being a survival game, does that mean we have to go and get food and find calorie mates? And
we'll see how much
it means. Fix our broken bones.
Hey, it could just be, an action RPG. Have you got no survival tactics at all.
Yeah, or survival just means don't get shot, and that's every game.
Cookie, have you played Metal Gear Solid 3?
Which Metal Gear Solid 3? Or am I thinking of the 7 different versions of Metal Gear Solid 2?
They all have
Metal Gear Solid
versions.
3 has 2 versions, the standard and then subsistence, which is infinitely better.
Metal Gear Solid 3 is the one where you play as Naked Snake.
Yeah, the predecessor to Big Boss.
Oh, so the prequel to Big Metal Boss Gear Solid 2, right? Yeah,
one
Metal Gear Solid
two.
3 Snake Eater.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I played Snake Eater.
Snake Eater's good. Subsistence
I played two Sons of Liberty.
Yep.
I actually beat both of those.
If Left Alive takes some gameplay ideas from a survival game, or at least the survival elements of, say, Metal Gear Solid 3, I would be so excited.
No, I could dig on that.
Yeah, man. Like,
they could also take the survival elements from No Man's Sky.
Oh. Well, they could do that. I'd be less excited. I'd be a lot less excited.
If you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write them in to podcast@fancyramen.com.
And if you've been enjoying the show, like Dave has, leave a review with us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting service like Stitcher or Podcast Addict. We're on Stitcher?
I don't know if
we should,
honestly.
We should be on Stitcher. But most importantly, please tell a friend and help us grow our audience.
If Stitcher can search iTunes archive, then
it can find it. Yeah, that's the same way that Podcast Addict functions.
Okay, because I've never actually used Stitcher. So
anyway, yay. Write to us, review us, tell your friends how great we are, or to listen to us out of like, we could. I'm totally fine with getting hate listeners too. People who just like can't stand us, but they have to hear everything we say so they can tear it down.
We did get that one email that said that she couldn't reach or get past 6 minutes of our podcast.
Yeah, we're looking at you, anonymous writer. Keep listening, even if it's only out of like distaste for us.
Do you think she still is listening?
I hope so.
And be sure to look up Cho Aniki.
And be on the lookout for our anime omake.
That's
right. It's the first omake we've had in a while. I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Neil.
And that was Neil. Have a great day, guys.
'Music used in this episode comes from the soundtrack of Heat Signature, composed by Christopher James Harvey and John Halpart.